Withers strung up a man, whom they say he murdered three. Strange things have happened there. No stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree.
Show, I'm your host, Chris James. And remember 2 weeks ago I said I had a really bad cold? Well, yesterday I managed to pick up the flu. So I am not at the top of my game. I'm still going to do the show. Hopefully it won't sound too bad. If it does, I'll give you your money back. Coffee. Get some. Organic Man Coffee Trike. 4501 McPherson. Consume and enjoy. If you want to order a bag or two, go to organicmancoffeetrike.shop. Vicar Manson has been trying to hit 100 episodes. He's doing a good job in keeping me entertained and informed. It's a lot of work putting out a show every week. That's why so many folks will start a podcast only to wither and die after a few months. Josh Turner puts out several shows each week. He has a podcast, the live stream, his guest show. I know I'm missing something. Once in a while, he has to stop the show and sort out a problem at his business as well. Too much work. Check out Paranormal Roundtable. It's a great show. Magic is an ancient practice rooted in rituals, spiritual divination, cultural lineage, with the intention to invoke, manipulate, or manifest supernatural forces, beings, or entities in the natural world. Magic is a generic label used by outsiders to describe specific practices in societies in which these word or its conceptual equivalent may not even exist. Arthur C. Clarke said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. What is magic, and how does it work? I'm not a magician, and I know very little about turning gold into lead. I did say I read a lot of Terry Pratchett books. In the Bible, opinions vary as to the differences between black and white magic, ranging from the idea that they are two names for exactly the same thing, to the belief that they are completely different, especially in goals and intentions. The Bible does not differentiate between good and bad magic. Magic is magic as far as the Bible is concerned. Scripture doesn't distinguish whether the magic is supposed to be used for good or bad. It is forbidden because it appeals to a source of power other than God. My cats keep playing with the computer again. In Exodus, God spoke to Moses through a burning bush and charged him to speak to Pharaoh on his behalf. During the commissioning, God granted Moses the ability to perform miracles, knowing that Pharaoh would demand a sign that God instructed Moses and Aaron to throw down Aaron's staff upon their first meeting with the ruler. Aaron did so, and his staff turned into a snake. The Pharaoh immediately summoned his magicians, who were able to turn their own staffs into snakes. Aaron's snake proceeded to devour the magician's snakes. Moses and Aaron were performing miracles, and not magic, with God's blessing. Magic is entertaining and gives us a sense of wonder. Miracles have a clear purpose. Magic shows the power of the doer. And miracles point towards the power of God. I don't know exactly what was written in the original scrolls handed down from God. I don't understand Hebrew, Aramaic, or Greek. Men, some with personal agendas, have translated the writings into English. Many kings told their scribes to put this in that book and take that out. The books of the Bible were decided by a group of religious leaders known as the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. These men decided which books should be included in the Bible and which should not. The council ultimately decided a list of 27 books for the New Testament and 39 books for the Old. They say these men were divinely guided to make their decisions. They also say the same thing about the Inquisition. A bunch of books were left out because, well, somebody thought they were not worthy of inclusion. You could say they went against their community standards. The Sword of Moses is the title of an apocryphal Hebrew language book of magic. The largest manuscript of the Sword of Moses begins with a description of the heavenly realms and angels, and soon moves on to describing various prayers, invocations, and ritual procedures that the reader is to perform before he is able to use the sword, a huge list of magical names listed in the text. Let's just leave it there and get on with the show. I am not a biblical scholar. Ancient Egypt had a lot of magicians, all dealing in potions and spells to either help or hinder, depending on what their customers wanted. They favored amulets with symbolism like their hieroglyphic writing. They had all manner of magic spells to bring good health or cause your enemies to perish. In ancient Egypt, if a woman were having difficulty conceiving a child, she might spend an evening in the Bes chamber located within the temple. Bes was the god of childbirth, sexuality, fertility, amongst other things. It was thought an evening in the god's presence would encourage conception. Women would carry Bes amulets, wear Bes tattoos, and in an effort to encourage fertility. Heka was the god of magic and the practice of the art itself. A magician, priest, or priest-physician would invoke Heka in a practice of their arts. The priests of the temple understood their functions was to honor and care for their particular deity and ensure a reciprocity between that god and the people. The priests or priestesses would not invoke Heka directly because he was already present in the power of the deities that they served. Heka was the god of medicine as well as magic. The two were considered equally important by medical professionals. There was a doctor with the title of general practitioner, and another one known as a magical practitioner. But magic was widely used by both. Doctors operated out of the society known as the House of Life, located in or near a temple, where medical texts were written, copied, studied, and discussed. Charms and spells were used to increase fertility, for luck in business, for improved health, and to curse your enemy. One's name was considered one's identity, but everyone also had a secret name, which only the individual and the gods knew. To discover one's secret name was to gain power over that person. If you couldn't discover another person's secret name, you could still exercise control by slandering that person's public name or erasing that person's name from history. This is why so many Egyptian monuments have chisel marks over many of the carvings. Those guys were constantly trying to erase each other. Mummification was a practice in order to preserve the body so that it could be recognized by the soul in the afterlife. If there was no body to inhabit, the soul was lost to wander about in the afterworld. In ancient Greece and Rome, binding magic was a big thing. They used fancy words written on small scrolls or carved into amulets to bind magic to the recipient. magic was used to enhance athletes in upcoming games. The local Madge would be employed to bind some magic to the piece of jewelry that was then worn by the person who wished to win the race. An amulet with the god Mercury emblazoned on it might be worn by a runner. The thing is, just about every runner was going to ask Mercury to be on their side, help them outrun all the others in the race. Just having the medallion wasn't enough. You had to offer sacrifices and offerings at Mercury's temple. You had to eat, sleep, breathe Mercury. You had to be his best friend. Some folks thought it might help to place some bad magic on their opponents. Curses were common among the ancients. This was all just a part of winning the game. Businessmen would also turn to magic to succeed. If an upcoming meeting was about to take place, they might go see a magician and buy a good luck chant, a piece of parchment with magic words written on it. The businessman would read this out loud several times a day. The parchment would be carried around all day and stay close by at night. Since the pocket wasn't invented yet, not until the 1500s, the magic spells were hung around their necks in small bags. With no place to put things like your car keys, everybody had a bag hanging from someplace. Loose change or a lucky rock had to be kept somewhere. People believed these spells would help. Even the sick were subject to magic. Aulus Gallienus, that's a Greek name. Aulus Gallienus, or Claudius Galenus, we call him Galen, was a Roman Greek physician, surgeon, and philosopher. He's considered one of the most accomplished of all medical researchers of his time. Galen influenced the development of various scientific disciplines, including anatomy, physiology, pathology, pharmacology, and neurology. When he was about to perform surgery, Galen would have his slaves pass the medical instruments over an open flame so the gods of the flame could bless them. No one had any idea about sterilization or germs. Galen also separated sick and injured patient. He didn't know why, but the injured would get sick if placed near folks with diseases. Religion and medicine were almost the same thing. Magic would enter the picture as the patient was being treated. Medicine in ancient Rome combined scientific knowledge with supernatural and religious beliefs. Many ancient Roman physicians took dreams into consideration when making diagnoses and determining a treatment because they believed they could be signals from the soul about the humoral imbalance in the body. Roman doctors ascribed to the theory developed in ancient Greece that a person's health and emotions are governed by four internal substances: blood, phlegm, yellow bile, and black bile. Known as humors, they were connected to the four elements: hot, cold, wet, and dry. Galen's ideas lasted up until sometime in the early 1800s. The idea of bloodletting was used to balance the humors. You got too much of that red stuff moving about your body. We'll just remove some. You don't need all that oxygen. Ancient China held many magical beliefs. In 1600 BC, divination, wizards, and alchemists were documented in ancient Chinese writings. Psychics, evil spirits, potions, and spells were a part of daily life. The Chinese zodiac was very popular. Astrologers were sought out to give answers to all kinds of questions as well as advice. When you were born, held power over who you would be. magicians and illusionists were welcomed in the palace to both entertain and enlighten the royal court. I Ching is translated as the Book of Change. It is primarily used in divination, text both in ancient Chinese history as well as today. Like the Bible, it is one of the oldest texts still in use. There are two theories on who wrote this document. According to traditional Chinese views, the I Ching was written by the sage king Fu Zi, who lived around 3000 BC. Legend has it the 8 trigrams were supernaturally revealed to Fu Zi. The alternative view suggests the I Ching was compiled around the late 900 BC, towards the end of the Zhao dynasty. The book contains 64 chapters. Each chapter references a hexagram, 6 horizontal lines arranged one above the next, either with a solid line, known as a yin, or a broken line called a yang. The I Ching describes every possible life situation and prescribes a particular description of what is most likely to happen next. One of the goals of using the I Ching is to align yourself more closely with the divine powers and their pre-etched path of faith. By taking the best possible actions and the best possible time, you greatly improve your chances for happiness and success. The I Ching is a self-contained divinatory system, requiring no additional or specialized knowledge on the parts of the reader. Anyone and everyone can consult the I Ching for matters of both importance and the mundane. A divination was used to ascertain the will of the deities whose power controlled human fate. It was believed that man co-created the universe, and he actively took part in the creation of the world as his own destiny. Fate was a main contender in ancient Chinese belief. Understanding, conforming to, manipulating, and even frustrating the requisites of fate was a constant goal. Ancient Chinese culture practiced ancestor worship, which meant that the deceased had the ability to shape and change the lives of the living. Ancestors were ritualistically worshipped, communed with, and appeased. Divination gave the ability to commune with the ancestors and figure out if they were angry or pleased, if they would help, or approve of an arrangement, or unfold the pattern of fate. Techniques included the cracking of oracle bones, throwing sticks, the I Ching and astrological readings of the sky. A number of subjects were consulted, ranging from military campaigns, sacrifice, weather, hunting, agriculture, illness, dreams, construction, tribute, and a request for divine assistance. In Chinese astrology, a person's fate is not dictated simply by the influence of planets, but by a complex, interwoven natural rhythm and alignment of planets, tides, seasons, stars, and the phases of the moon. This is all based on the idea that the 3 kinds of fate rule our lives. Heaven's fate, which is something people have no control over. Earth fate, something people can change to a certain extent. And human fate, which are entirely dependent upon ourselves and our actions. The purpose of Chinese astrology is to understand heaven's fate and to align ourselves with its divine path. In Western culture, the left and right hand path are 2 opposite approaches to magic. This terminology is used by various groups involved in the occult and ceremonial magic. In some definitions, the left hand path is equated with malicious black magic, while the right-hand path is equated with benevolent white magic. In ancient Chinese magic, there was a Tao of the left, or the left-hand path, or the side door teachings. They practice sorcery that is extremely powerful and somewhat dangerous. Black magic is termed as ku, which implies magic which can be used as an instrument for injuring someone. Wu is associated with white magic, also considered to be the right-hand path. And now, it's time for a movie reference. Did you see the movie Big Trouble in Little China? Jack Burton, played by Kurt Russell, runs around with Egg Shen, played by Victor Wong, who is practicing white magic. Their opponent is David Lopan, played by James Hong, the evil guy who is trying to live forever, who is using the left-hand magic. In my opinion, this was probably one of the best movies ever made. In several cases, the practice of black magic has disastrous effects, causing the practitioner to become insane, in some cases even causing their death. Spirits of the deceased souls are summoned by the individuals who practice witchcraft, wizardry, or black magic. The spells are strong enough to summon spirits and to bring in both mental as well as physiological changes in the life of an individual, as well as in the energies of nature surrounding us. Around 200 BC, Chinese magic mirrors came into use. Unlike the magic mirror on the wall, this device was used to keep secrets. The mirrors were made of solid bronze. The front was polished and could be used as a mirror. The back had a design or a decoration. When sunlight shines onto the mirror appears to become transparent. There's a symbol that you can't read. It's all just lines and it makes no sense. If the light is reflected from the mirror onto a wall, a pattern will appear on the back of the mirror, and this is projected onto the wall. During ancient times, Chinese people believed the reflection in the mirror was not their reflection, but another being. Popular thought was the other creature mimicked the person standing in front of the mirror so they could learn their ways, and later, when they were fully ready, emerge from the mirror, which acted as a portal between this world and theirs, and they would then take the person's place. Mirrors as portals. Where have I heard that before? Back to the magic mirror. If you looked into the mirror, all you would see was your reflection, or maybe that other being. By shining it against the wall, you would see either the image of Buddha or some other religious figure. There were also some mirrors with writing that could appear in the projected reflection. Undecipherable to the mirror viewer, the words would become apparent only in the projection. We just had Three Kings Day and ate too much of that Rosca de Reyes bread. Three Kings bread is popular with Latin families. It's also popular in Louisiana, the Galette de Reyes, I believe is how they call it. In Christianity, the three wise men, three kings, the three magi, are distinguished foreigners who visit Jesus after his birth, bearing gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh as a homage to his divinity. The following day, the three wise women showed up with diapers, formula, and wipes. The Magi appear solely in the Gospel of Matthew, which states they were wise men who came from the east to worship the King of the Jews. No information is given as to their names, origins, appearance, or the exact number, all of which derives from the inference of expressions by later Christians. Over the centuries, legend has assigned them names. Gaspar or Casper, Melchior, and Balthazar. The Balthazar has a Persian sound to it. If these men were scholars from Persia, they would have been familiar with Daniel's prophecies about the Messiah. The identification of the Magi as kings is linked to the Old Testament prophecy that described the Messiah being worshipped by kings. The name Magi is translated as magicians. It is also sometimes astrologers. They use the stars to divine the coming of Christ. Astrologers and magicians are sometimes lumped together as being the same. In Western Christianity, they are traditionally assumed to have been three in number, corresponding with each of the gifts. In Eastern Christianity, especially Syriac churches, there are often as many as 12 wise men. Three men traveling long distances are not going to move alone. Each is going to have his entourage, his support group. Days of travel meant nights in tents and cooking over a fire. Everything had to be transported with them, and this meant a bunch of people. If each king had just 5 companions, that would have meant there were 17 people gathered around that manger. If it had been a 12-man visitation, that would mean you would have something that looked like an army standing around outside. Likewise, the Magi's social rank is never stated. Their status as kings likely derives from interpretations of the Old Testament prophecies starting from around the 3rd century. Trying not to cough or sneeze. We might never know what these guys visiting Jesus were or how they managed to find him in the middle of nowhere. The important part isn't who they were, it's who he was. Spells weren't just said in the ancient world, they were written down. A lot of people back then didn't know how to read or write. This created a group called scribes. Their job was to write things down and then read them back to anybody who needed to know. Writing was nothing like today. Some cultures didn't use punctuation. All the letters just ran together, leading to many mistakes in translation. The difference between here and there is a T. Having a magic spell in your possession was okay, but to get a full effect, you needed to read it out loud and often. In order for the commoners to benefit from good luck spells, the magicians began putting them in amulets with carvings or pictures that didn't require reading. Curses were another thing. No one would want to carry a curse around in their possession. The magicians used curse tablets that were carved into wax or stone, depending on how much money you had. The curse was written out, and this was enough to get things going. The tablet had to be placed somewhere near its desired target, maybe hidden in the bushes out front of his home. In many traditions, a curse can only be effective if the recipient knows they are cursed. It might involve psychology. Knowing you've been cursed and believing in magic, your mind would create all the bad things the magician had written. This might have led to a kind of a tulpa, a thought form, coming into your life and making you pay for the wrongs you did to other people. Another sneaky way of placing a curse was an amulet with a nice image carved on the face. The amulet was actually hollow. Inside was a scroll or an image of some nasty thing that was going to lead to your having bad luck. This would negate the idea of the tulpa since you had no idea that the curse was even there. Anti-magic legislation existed in both ancient Greece and ancient Rome, even before the days of Christianity. But after such laws only covered magic that actually killed or injured someone. A stepmother was sued for administering a fatal love charm to her stepson's mistress. If you only use your ancient curses, spells, and charms to inflict mild harm instead of death, you'd be off the hook. Simon Magus, also known as Simon the Sorcerer or Simon the Magician, was a religious figure who confronted with Peter, is recorded in the Acts of the Apostles. According to Acts, Simon was a Samaritan Magus, or religious figure, of the 1st century A.D., and he converted to Christianity, being baptized by Phil the Evangelist. Simon later clashed with Peter. In Irish legend, Simon Magus came to be associated with the Druids. He is said to have come to the aid of the Mag Ryuth. The fierce denunciation of Christianity by Irish Druids appears to have resulted in Simon Magus being associated with the Druids. When Rome fell in 400, law was left up to the local communities. What you said was law, was the law. There were no senators in Rome to say otherwise. Slowly, seeing as much of Europe was Christian, the church took on the role as the lawgivers as well. Each king or prince was crowned by the church, and this gave them authority over most of Europe. The association of Simon Magus with the Druids led to a lot of folks in Europe considering magicians as being sided with the Antichrist. Medicine was something most people had no idea about. If you became sick or injured, it was either left up to nature to fix it, because all fevers will return to room temperature eventually, maybe because you're dead. All bleeding will stop, especially once you run out of the red stuff. If you were lucky enough to have a wise one or a wise woman living nearby, you could go see her and hope she had a cure for what ails you. Only a very few people understood if you take the bark from the willow tree and boil it, the liquid will alleviate a toothache. The resulting potion is called acetylsalicylic acid, the base substance in aspirin. The whole concept of healing through nature was beyond most people's thinking. There was no library you could visit and read up on cures. The only way to learn these medicinal treatments was to become an apprentice to someone who knew all the herbs and the roots needed to make life less painful and maybe extend it a few years. The term wisecraft refers to the practice of folk medicine. Helpful folk medicine, magic, and divination in Europe from the Middle Ages. The practitioners of this craft were known as cunning folk or wise folk. The term witchcraft can be traced back to prehistoric times when early humans looked to the natural world for guidance and protection. As the church began to seize power throughout Europe, the belief began to grow that you had to turn to God through prayer for any kind of cure. If you became sick, you were doing something bad and you needed to atone for your sins. This concept clashed with the idea of seeking out a cure from nature. Somehow the two names were merged and the old lady with the answers became known as a witch. Why the idea of separating nature and religion when dealing with sickness is lost to time. There are lots of theories coming from both sides to excuse less than decent actions. Let's just say that things were rotten. People were still practicing magic. There were magicians attached to most of the rulers in Europe. They went by other names and they kept their secrets secret. William of William of Auvergne, a 13th century French priest and bishop, condemned most magic as superstition. He did admit that some works of natural magic should be viewed as a branch of science, as long as the practitioners didn't use this knowledge for evil. They weren't doing anything criminal. Since hardly anyone knew how to read, books on how to cure an illness or how to find a lost item was beyond understanding by most. Only a select few could be able to read, and this made them very much sought after and in positions of some power. The church and natural medicine got along for some time. If you needed something we would consider paranormal today, you went to the person who could read. Usually that was the priest. There's a magic ritual intended to help a farmer find his lost cattle. Practitioners would appeal to the elements or other supernatural sources to help them determine the place of their lost items. During a particularly difficult childbirth, the woman was to go to the cemetery and step over the freshest grave 3 times while reciting a magic incantation. There's a recipe for a drink that protects against malevolent spirits. To make the drink, the individual must trace a prayer on a piece of paper before asking a virgin to wash the paper in running water. The practitioner must then add the paper to a mixture of herbs and consecrated wine. There were detailed charts that told people what days would be the best for various activities. Dreams were also often used to predict the future. So too could the calls of birds, the paths that they flew, and what the sky looked like during a particular time of the day. Even the sound of thunder could provide a warning of what was coming. If the sound came from the east, it was thought to foretell a year with a great deal of bloodshed. The church did kind of object to magic practiced by the commoners. Magic and Christianity blended in much more harmonious way in the Middle Ages than you might think. Some magic drew on Christian elements. Practitioners would use religious objects and prayers to influence the course of events. Monks and priests were often involved in the rituals. The Old English charm for unfruitful land tells the farmer to dig up 4 chunks of soil in the middle of the night from the 4 corners of his field. The dirt was to be taken to the church, where the priest would sing 4 masses over them while turning the green side towards the altar. The charms blended superstitious magical actions with Christian rituals and is a typical example of harmonious blend between Christian and magic in the Middle Ages. Some of these methods were considered superstitious by the Christian church in the Middle Ages. They were never associated with demonic magic until the dawning of the witch hunts. Through the 11th century, the Catholic Church suppressed what they believed to be heresy through a system of ecclesiastical prescriptions or imprisonment. Torture was not used, just time in jail. The death penalty was forbidden. As time moved on, some kings decided it was economically a good idea to kill those accused of heresy so they could seize their land. Pope Siricius Ambrose of Milan and Martin of Tours protested against the execution of Priscillian, saying it was an undue interference in ecclesiastical discipline by a civil tribunal. Viewed as an heretic, Priscillian was executed as a sorcerer. Pope Ambrose refused to give any recognition to Bishop Ithacus of Osunoba, and not wanting anything to do with church members who had sent heretics to their deaths. In the 12th century, to counter the spread of Catharism, prosecution of heretics became more frequent. The church charged councils composed of bishops and archbishops with established inquisitions. The first inquisition was temporarily established in Languedoc in 1184. The murder of Pope Innocent's papal legate, Pierre de Castellanon, in 1208 sparked the Albigensian Crusade from 1209 to 1229. The Inquisition was permanently established in 1229, running largely by the Dominicans in Rome and later in Carcassonne in Languedoc. By the end of the Middle Ages, England and Castile in central Spain were the only large Western nations without a papal inquisition. Most inquisitors were friars who taught theology and law in universities. They used inquisitional procedures, a legal practice adopted from the early ancient Roman court procedures. They judged heresy along with bishops and groups of clergy, serving in a role that was roughly analogous to a jury or a legal advisory. The local authorities were used to establish a tribunal and to prosecute heretics. After 1200, a grand inquisitioner headed each inquisition. There's something called mission creep. Let's use the military as an example. The army is sent into a country to take out some nasty despot. Once done, they linger on to keep the peace and be sure that none of the minions step into the void. Someone suggests that the army enforce some of the laws, just so nobody gets killed or tries to earn an honest living. This is followed by the army becoming the police force. They begin enforcing all things from don't murder to stop spitting on the sidewalk. This is not in the army's job description. It just kind of happens. Mission creep. The prosecution of witchcraft generally became more prominent in the late medieval and the Renaissance era, driven partially by the upheaval of the era. The Black Death had killed thousands of people all over Europe. The Hundred Year War ran for, 100 years. Gradual cooling of the climate led to what became known as a Little Ice Age. Not understanding why these things happened, some people began saying it was those people's fault. They weren't worshiping God the right way. Let's kill them. Witches and magicians were blamed for just about every bad thing. Some historians point to the influence of the Reformation on the European witch hunt. A mission creep was taking place. The hunt for heretics turned into a witch hunt. Dominican priest Heinrich Kramer was assistant to the Archbishop of Salzburg in 1484. Kramer requested that Pope Innocent VII clarify his authority to prosecute witchcraft in Germany, where he had been refused assistance by the local ecclesiastical authority. They maintained that Kramer would not legally function in their area. The papal bull, Summis Desiderantis Effectibus, or Desiring a Supreme Ardor, sought to remedy this jurisdictional dispute by specifically identifying the dioceses of Mainz, Köln, Trier, Salzburg, and Bremen. Some scholars view the bull as being clearly political. A papal bull is a type of public decree, a letter, or a charter issued by the Pope of the Catholic Church. It is named after the leaden seal, called a bulla, affixed to the paper as a form of authentication. The bull failed to ensure that Kramer obtained the support that he had hoped for. In fact, he was subsequently expelled from the city of Innsbruck by the local bishops, George Galser, who ordered Kramer to stop making false accusations. Galser described Kramer as a senile old man in a letter written shortly after the incident. This rebuke led Kramer to write a justification for his views on witchcraft in the 1486 book Malleus Maleficarum, The Hammer Against Witches. In the book, Kramer stated his views that witchcraft was to blame for bad weather. The book is also noted for its attitude against women. Despite Kramer's claim that the book gained acceptance from the clergy at the University of Cologne, it was in fact condemned by the clergy in Cologne for advocating views that violated Catholic doctrine and standard inquisitional procedures. In 1538, the Spanish Inquisition cautioned its members not to believe anything the Malleus said. We could say the entire witch hunt in Europe came about because of one man, Kramer. But would it have happened had Kramer never written his book? History has a way of happening the same way, despite what some folks would think. Had Adolf Schicklgruber not grown up to become Hitler, World War II would probably still have happened, only we'd have some other name to despise. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. I didn't say that right. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. Monty Python's Flying Circus. Everything I know about England came from watching that show. King Ferdinand II of Aragon and Queen Isabel I of Castile, yes, the same queen who commissioned old Chris to sail across the Atlantic looking for India, established the Spanish Inquisition in 1478. In contrast to the previous Inquisitions, it operated completely under royal authority. The trials and tortures were all staffed by clergy and orders, but operated independently of the Vatican. It operated in Spain and in most Spanish colonies and territories, which included the Canary Islands, the Kingdom of Sicily, and all Spanish possessions in North, Central, and South America. As the Inquisition grew strength, it began prosecuting just about everyone for anything considered mysterious or magical. During the time of the Inquisition, some folks were still dabbling with magic. Michael Sendrivogus, who lived from 1566 to 1636, was a Polish alchemist. He looked into empirical experimentation in alchemy and made notable contributions to early chemistry. Tommaso Campanella lived from 1568 to 1639, was an Italian philosopher who blended Christianity with mysticism in works like The City of the Sun. He envisioned an idea socially governed by divine principles. Jacob Bohem, 1575 to 1624, was a German mystic who explored the relationship between the divine and the human experience, influencing later mystical movements. Had any of these folks fallen on the wrong side of someone, they might have found themselves being questioned by the Inquisition and possibly winding up in a bonfire. Hugh Draper, a 16th century Bristol innkeeper, who got sent to the Tower of London for attempted sorcery. He claimed that although he had been interested in magic, he had burnt all of his magical books. While locked in his cell, waiting to visit the headsman, Draper carved a magical image onto the wall. The next morning, he was gone. The entire castle was searched, but he was never found. His attempted sorcery looks like it just might have worked. If you listened to or read Unhappy Birthday, you might recognize the name. I used him as a character in the story. John Baptist von Helmont was a Flemish chemist who coined the term gas and conducted experiments on plant growth, expanding the understanding of chemistry. Sir Kenelm Digby was known for his diverse interests. He created the sympathetic powder, believing it was a mystical healing properties. Isaac Newton is famous for his scientific achievements. He also delved into alchemy and collected esoteric manuscripts, revealing his fascination with hidden knowledge. The Inquisition didn't suddenly stop. It took a long time, longer than seems reasonable, to grind down. By decree of Napoleon's government in 1797, the Inquisition in Venice was abolished in 1806. In Portugal, in the wake of the Liberal Revolution of 1820, the General Extraordinary and Constitutional Courts of the Portuguese Nation abolished the Portuguese Inquisition in 1821. All that Renaissance Enlightenment didn't do anything to stop the bloodshed. As science began to become less magical and more intellectual, people began to see the benefits of using some of these mysterious actions in day-to-day life. Things like not dying from every disease out there and creating new materials and substances. With the rise of the Nazis in Germany, their idea of occult connections to the past and aliens, as well as transdimensional contact, is credited with their sudden rise to power. Some of their upper echelon practiced magic as a means of taking over the world. Himmler was obsessed with collecting magical talismans to enhance his abilities. The folks in England began to use their own magicians to try getting ahead. Aleister Crowley was recruited to work for MI5 to try beating the magicians on the other side of the channel. The U.S. also enlisted the use of magicians, folks who delved into what some call the dark arts, people like Jack Parsons, who was hired to help develop the rocket program for the military. Jet Propulsion Laboratories was founded by Jack Parsons. In the name of winning the war, a lot of bizarre actions took place. People forget that when you dance with the devil, he gets to lead. Once the war was over, society seemed to have taken a sharp decline. Instead of living our lives and enjoying what we had, people began focusing on what they thought they wanted. They needed things that they had never heard of before. The advertisers began bombarding people with consumables nobody had ever needed, and then everybody had to have. The Nazis never surrendered. The Germans did. The Nazis did everything they could to avoid having to pay for their crimes, and many in power helped them under the pretense of saving the world from communism. Operation Paperclip brought many war criminals into the U.S. We were told our country needed their minds. Or was this the cost of having put our future in the hands of people who practiced black magic? At what point does magic turn from healing the sick to dominating the world? Why do so many people look to perform magic decide to take the left-hand path? Is it easier, or does it have a stronger pull? A lot of people will say the power of magic comes from the earth, nature energy. The ley lines are one source of energy that I'm just now getting to. The idea goes that ancient sacred sites have been constructed in alignment with one another. The folks doing all the building had somehow divined the location of these power lines and built along them. Where several lines converge was an especially strong location. 1846, Reverend Edward Duke observed some prehistoric monuments and medieval churches aligned with each other. 1909, the idea was advanced in Germany. Wilhelm Tilt referred to them as Heiliglinien, or holy lines. He said the presence of linear alignments connecting various sites had a religious and astronomical function. The holy lines were adopted by some proponents of the Nazi Party. The idea of leys as paths traversing the British landscape was developed by Alfred Watkins, a wealthy businessman and antiquarian who lived in Hereford. A ley is a field not being used for agriculture. This can be for a year or for several. Watson was driving across the hills near Blackwarden, Herefordshire, when he looked across the landscape and observed the way several features lined up together. He began drawing lines across a survey map, developing the idea ancient British people would travel in straight lines using marked points along the landscape to guide them. How do you find a ley line? You can use dowsing rods. Just walk back and forth, waiting for the rods to cross, or you can use a pendulum. A pendulum will begin to swing back and forth anytime you're near an energy source. The stronger the power, the faster it will swing. Once you've found them, you have to figure out how to tap into the energy without selling your soul. Perhaps it's as easy as holding your hand up in the air and asking God to send the energy your way. Magic, to me, is just a lack of understanding of how things work. Which plants will make me feel better, and which ones will make me sick? Boy, I wish I knew that one right now. The dark magic is what you should be avoiding. If you use magic to heal someone, that's a good thing. If you use it to gain power or to cause someone harm, then you're delving into things best left alone. Those guys you see on stage doing tricks, most are just sleight-of-hand practitioners. They have secret tricks that make people think something incredible is happening. Some of them are into some very secret things. Which ones, I don't know. I hear about occult organizations that they belong to that one of the main rules is they don't talk about what they do, like the Bilderberger folks. My magic comes in a red suit. Kids can still get excited when Santa shows up. They believe in the magic of Christmas. Folks who try to convince them otherwise should take a long, hard look at themselves and ask, why destroy someone else's magic? Especially some little kids. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. I hope I sounded human. Hopefully I'll be much better shape next week. Didn't I say that 2 weeks ago? If you'd like to support the show, you can buy one of my books at Amazon. You can get the Laredo Paranormal Research Society, Paranormal Laredo, the Fort McIntosh and the Paranormal, and Paranormal Stories. If you have a story that you'd like to pass on to me, you can contact me at strangethings@arcanasa.com. Till next Saturday, this is Chris James for Strange Things.
Are you coming to the tree where they strung up a man who they say he murdered 3? Strange things have happened there. No stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree.